So you're on your way to work, or maybe you're on your way home. Welcome to another edition of What the How, and we're talking right now about the future of jobs, and we have a really esteemed panel to fill us in. So let's start with everybody introducing themselves.
Hi, I'm Joan Lynch. I'm the Chief Content and Programming Officer at Working Nation.
I'm Paul Irving. I chair the Milken Institute Center for the Future of Aging.
And I'm Ramona Schindelheim, the Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation.
So let's start with what is Working Nation? Ramona?
Yeah, Working Nation, we are a nonprofit news and content provider focused on the future of work. And we're made up, the content side is made up of a lot of journalists, network background, local news background. And we like to, we highlight the changing technology and how it's changing the nature of work, how it's eliminating jobs and creating jobs.
Is this a magazine? Is it a newspaper? Is it a TV channel?
It's a little bit of everything. That's what's great. Yeah, we started out, actually, our founder, Art Bilger, started out wanting to do a documentary about structural unemployment, which at the time we said, I don't even know what that is. I never took an economics class. 4 years later, we make short documentaries, a series called Do Something Awesome. We do town halls. Our first film actually was an animated film directed by Marshall Curry and voiced by Anthony Anderson of Black-ish, and that was released on CNN's Money platform. So we provide content to multiple distribution partners, but we put a human face on work.
But are you able, could anybody who's listening right now find Working
Absolutely.
Nation?
Absolutely. Yeah, just go to workingnation.com.
There you go. Yep. All right, so workingnation.com. And Paul, you're dealing with something entirely different because at the Milken Institute, first you were president of the Milken Institute.
I was.
Why don't you explain what the Milken Institute is for people who have never heard of it before?
Yeah, so we are a 501c3 nonprofit, HAL, that has a series of centers. As you said, I was president of the Institute before. And I chair this thing called the Center for the Future of Aging, which does research and convening and ultimately is a mission-driven center that's really focused on promoting the notion of healthy, productive, and purposeful aging.
Now, when you were president, this was your idea and you wanted to create this thing. Why?
Well, I was getting older.
Simple answer.
That's one reason. No, I mean
job security.
Seriously. What I recognized, I was involved in a research project, and what I recognized was very much like climate change, population aging, the impacts of it. This combination of increasingly long lives, longevity, and declining birth rates is really going to change everything about our world. Mm. It's going to change our businesses. The thing we're talking about today. It's going to change our communities and our families, our academic institutions, and yet just not enough people are talking about it and preparing for it. So I thought to myself, this is something that needs to be more conversation around dinner tables, around policy tables, and in business and boardrooms. And families need to think about this as well.
So everybody in this room is basically working with a nonprofit. And if you take the entirety of my financial career, I've been a nonprofit. And you know, but what the hell, right?
Right.
What the hell?
What the hell? But I think that you know there is really something to be thought about here, because people are living longer. Many are still retiring in their 50s or 60s, right? You have early retirement for some people.
Yep. A lot of people don't even retire. They work until they're 67, 77. I mean,
I wasn't there yet. What I was getting at was the point that, you know, as we live longer and if we retire at the time traditionally that people have been retiring, that becomes a longer gap mm-hmm. of nothing to do.
Yeah, and I want to actually push back on Ramona for a second.
I love the way you push back.
I like pushing back because actually the way Hal framed the question I think was really right. The truth of the matter is a lot more people want to work longer,
sure.
need to work longer. They need to work longer because they need the money. They should work longer because it's stimulating and engaging. But the reality is that retirement ages haven't actually moved that much. If you look at the numbers, people still tend to retire in their late 50s and early 60s, despite the fact that it makes increasingly little sense. So there's this gap between what people want and or say they want and what we know is good for them, good for their money, good for their health, and what they're actually able to do. And that's a product of ageism and a lot of other things that we can talk more about.
But it's interesting, you know, we talked earlier about the idea that I have an aunt who's 104, I have a mom who's 94. You know, this is not, it's weird, but it's not uncommon now for people to live well into their 80s and even well into their 90s. We see more people into their hundreds than we used to see. And so whatever the reason is driving age up, the body is still falling apart about the same time. The aches and pains still kick in about the same time. The spinal stenosis is still back there at about the same time. But yet we're living longer and we're dealing with aches and pains opposed to diversions like a good job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, one of the big problems we have, I think, is, you know, we talk about it in my world. It's wonky, but the distinction between mortality and morbidity. Another way to think about it is just that we live a long time in not great health. So the question, I think, for all of us is not just how do we extend our lives, but really importantly, how do we extend our health span, the period of time in which we're healthy. That most of us have a fantasy about the end. And the fantasy is we live these incredibly healthy lives, and then all of a sudden a day comes, we're laying in our bed with children and grandchildren laying around and with this kind of orange glow over our bed, and we kind of go,
nice
go
music,
right,
in the
nice music in the background. Yeah. You've got it, and we kind of go peacefully to sleep. Wouldn't that be lovely? But yeah. The truth of the matter is that's not the reality for most people. So that's something we all have to work on.
Well, I mean, you know, and it's a fascinating change to me that we're seeing that. But let's kind of back up a whole long way and get to millennials, people coming out of college. You know, the job skill sets are changing as well.
Yeah, as technology changes, and it's changing very, very quickly, probably quicker than it has in decades, what people are needing in jobs is changing. But we're not keeping people up to date on those skills. That's what we talk about all the time, is how do we get people skilled? So if a job that was like on a factory floor, and it's an easy task, now could be replaced by a robot because it's repetitive. It doesn't take much brain space to do it, so let a robot do it. We're moving to a more knowledge-based economy now. So the people who have the soft skills that can problem solve, they've got cognitive thinking skills, team player skills, those are the people that are needed. There are needs for technical people. That's not a question, but I'm saying this is where we're shifting.
But the problem, at least the challenge/opportunity that I think is there, is you have a lot of people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. Let's just say 40s and 50s. And they're trained to work in those assembly lines. Mm-hmm. Now, you're going to replace them with a piece of equipment that's going to do the repetitive skill that they've been doing. But where are they going to get that knowledge base? Mm-hmm. They're 40, they're 50,
right.
They're going towards 60.
This is what we are trying to raise awareness of, and Joan can speak to this as well. We're trying to raise the awareness that we have to rethink the way we look at education. It's the lifelong learning model where at 20 you need to learn certain skills, but jobs are going to change, so you need to be able to change with them. Mm-hmm. So for that 40-year-old, there are certification programs. There's community college programs.
I hate to be the one that throws water on that.
No, throw water on it. We like that too.
I'm going to say what Paul says. I'm going to push back a little bit on that.
Everybody keeps pushing back.
But here, the point is this: you got a 40 something, a 50 something. They got kids. They have kids in their home. They have a mortgage. They have all this stuff going on. When are they going to have time to retrain?
Joan, talk about the carrier.
Yeah, that's funny. I was just thinking about that. Yeah. So we've been down in Indianapolis initially since the carrier news came out a few years ago. I think you all remember somebody put the cell phone up and watched the plant manager essentially say the jobs are going to Mexico. So we went in and started spending a lot of time. We're shooting a documentary called The Middle on Indianapolis. But one of the things that was interesting, and it really speaks to sort of the fear in this country, is we were talking to some of these folks, and there was a number of them that said they were more comfortable being unemployed than being retrained, which is a really frightening experience to have.
That's a frightening statement.
It is a frightening statement. But what we really dug deep into was it was lexicon, because not everyone, but the certain group of people that we talked to said, school's not for me. Education, you say retraining, you say any of those things to people, and they flash back to being in the classroom with the chalkboard. And in a couple of the cases, we just asked some questions like, do you like to play video games? Yeah, I do. Oh, that's actually how they train. They use VR to train for some of these programs that in 6 weeks you could have a job here in Indianapolis. And that's surprising to people. That's where I think Working Nation fills the gap, where we're saying to people, let me work with you. What are you good at? What do you want to do? And then in your community, what are your opportunities? Globally. You can't talk globally anymore.
And so to answer, go back to your question and tie that together too, the idea that because you're 40, you can't do this is ridiculous. You may be afraid to do it because you haven't been in that classroom. You may not have people telling you how to do it, because I don't think the local media, the national media, do a very good job of getting word out there that these opportunities exist. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we exist, you know, because we want to share that.
But the question isn't about sort of why you exist. The question is, those who do exist and they're in their 50s, who have full families, very little money, big obligations. One of the things that's interesting to me, we recently had a program in which we talked about new homeless data. And you're going to see where this connects. But what the study indicated, it was the annual census they take of the people out on the street and in homeless situations, but 9% of the African-Americans in this county, now the county is made up of 9% African-Americans. I said that backwards. However, among the homeless, 40% are African-American. So one of the things they say is the reason for that is an example, institutional racism, because like maybe years ago, somebody who was African-American couldn't buy a house, say in Culver City, in a LA area type of community. So that's wealth. So they couldn't build on that wealth. And so today, they don't have that kind of thing that a lot of other people have. And so in that kind of a scenario, if their bills go up, rent goes up $500, they're homeless.
And you're absolutely right. And I'm not saying you're not right, because you are, that people with a family, you know, they have kids in college, they, you know, maybe they're already working two jobs, who knows? To be able to try to get one of these programs, into one of these programs is difficult. We talk about how communities need to work together with companies to make those opportunities available, whether it's online or in person, make them affordable, because the whole community depends on it, because you need quality. A good job is a quality of life issue. If you don't have good jobs, you don't have good consumers. So everybody needs to work together to make these opportunities available.
There's also, Hal, an employer question, right? So in the U.S., we still don't have, although some people speculate that we're beginning to experience workforce shortages, right? Expertise shortages. In Europe and Asia, which have much more rapidly aging populations, companies are already experiencing challenges in attracting, retaining, and figuring out how to marshal the kind of talent they need to make sure that they continue to operate their businesses. I mean, and I've got reporting on this. Places like BMW and various others that have done, you know, fairly advanced thinking on all this. So the notion again, and I just want to endorse in this case everything that
look at that he's not pushing back.
No, I'm not pushing back.
Oh,
is
thank you.
You know what we have to do is we have to change culture around education. You know you can't change culture in a very short period of time, right?
Right.
1964 Civil Rights Act didn't end racism, and the modern women's movement now 40, 45 years ago didn't create pay parity. But if we don't start by beginning a conversation about lifelong learning, this is something I talk to kids on campus about, the fact that all of us should be expecting throughout our lives in whatever way we do. Joan's exactly right. Some people love the classroom, some hate it. Some people like online learning. Some hate it. Some should be educated within their workplaces. Some people in academic institutions. Some people potentially through entertainment and other vehicles. If we don't think to ourselves growing up that learning is a lifelong process, then we've lost the game. So that's the challenge for all of us, recognizing the diversity of talents and needs and expectations.
You know, I understand that completely, but I do want to ask this. Even in today's world, I know people very well, who count down the days, the hours, and the minutes to retirement.
Yeah.
They have the circle on the calendar on the red letter day, and they're ready. And, you know, tomorrow it's only 12 days, and the next day it's only 11 days, and they can't wait. But you know what? Isn't that all really a bad situation?
My view is that's a culture thing, too. We've kind of post-World War II. Before World War II, there were very different retirement expectations. By the way, you have to remember, when Social Security was enacted in the United States, average longevity was 61.7 years. Mm-hmm. Neither you or I would be sitting here today on this podcast.
Well, I'm only 29.
Exactly.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Did you hear me?
What the hell I'm talking about. So the bottom line is the kind of retirement norms that we see, this notion of kind of a life of leisure and this expectation that we check off all the days and then we head down to some place that has a shuffleboard court and a
well, I was thinking about a drink
center,
with an umbrella in
maybe
it.
maybe a drink with an umbrella in it. That was by the way, very well marketed, and I underscore marketed norm and expectation a generation ago, but expectations and objectives are changing.
But you still hear these two words. I have a bucket list.
You do. And by the way, I think choice is a really important thing. I think for some people, you know, continuing full time work at 70 hours a week makes a ton of sense. I think for other people, it may be writing poetry. For other people, it may be playing golf. But the point is, we have to figure out a way to restructure our society to enable both health and financial wherewithal for these much longer lives. And again, I think regardless of what you want to do, I think this notion of lifelong learning is critical. By the way, two more plugs on the lifelong learning front. In addition to reskilling and all the other things we need to do for work, we have an incredible deficit of understanding in terms of both financial and health literacy in our country. We talked earlier about the need to keep people healthier longer. We talked about retirement readiness and financial security. If we don't invest ongoing money, interest, time, thinking in how we elevate the awareness of Americans about money and health, we're going to be in big trouble.
There's a term that we use at Working Nation where we say we need to instill a bit of rational panic. And I would say, you know, the cultural issues that Paul is talking about, how are people supposed to know what is really going on? It's through storytelling and it's through journalism. A lot of our journalism, as we can all agree, is solely focused on our federal government at this point. Some of the local stuff, each of the great channels like you guys are doing, folks are watching. But this is why having these conversations with people like you is so important. I want to know what's going on in Los Angeles. If I'm in Los Angeles, what are my opportunities? And looking at, I am going to live longer. What does that mean? You know, I still want to be a consumer. That's what we talk about a lot. I still want to be able to go on a vacation every year. Not just retire and go down. I mean, the drink sounds great with the umbrella.
But what does that actually mean? The island with nobody else on it.
Especially when we talk about, Ramona can talk about this, but the very, very low number of people that have pensions. You think about that in this country now. So you're going to retire and live on what? Oh, you're going to live on Social Security?
In bad health.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is another reason that I think it's exciting, because we're seeing some really good business leaders step in to drive for solutions, because they recognize also, I need someone to buy my $5 cup of coffee. I need a consumer in this country. So from our perspective, we're doing it for the good of the people, for their mental health, for all of these things. But in reality, it's just we really need a vibrant middle class in this country. And we're all hopefully going to be a part of that for longer than we probably expected to in terms of workforce.
Yeah. And by the way, on the lifelong learning front, a number of countries, a number of other countries, both particularly in Asia and Europe, have already adopted national lifelong learning strategies. They understand that global competitiveness is not about trade trade barriers. It's not about tariffs. It's about the talent and competitiveness and effectiveness of your human capital. And if we don't invest in our human capital in the United States, at you know, kids in school, K-12, and older people, people throughout their lives, we will lose our competitive edge in America.
And I always thought that that was the kind of the thinking, that we needed to have a competitive edge, that we needed to be able to do these sort of things. I thought that's kind of where we were already. Wrong?
I think you're wrong. I think if you look at academic performance, and I think if you look at education strategy as a national matter, what you see is we've now got on the table discussion about a Green New Deal. Whether that makes sense or not, I'm not gonna comment. We've had debates for years and years and years about a national immigration policy. We can't seem to get that done. The next thing we need, and I've got an op-ed coming out about this, so I'm going to. The next thing we need.
Send me a link.
I will. The next thing we need is an education New Deal, yeah. And the education New Deal has got to involve a lifelong learning strategy, which again goes from. Preschool all the way through the end of us.
I got to tell you something. This is a conversation I've had a lot lately with people. Having three kids in college, I can't even imagine how my kids' kids will be able to go to college.
Yeah.
They're already, you know, getting priced out of school. If there isn't some move ahead to, say, make community college free so you can afford to have a couple of years at an expensive four-year university, I don't know how we're going to continue to improve on this education.
I think you're right.
I think it's a problem.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
And I think some of the things that we've seen and done some stories on is at a local level, the partnerships between corporations, some of the community colleges. You know, community colleges as a whole, when people hear it, they think about the graduation rate or, you know, the number of people that go through that system. The great community colleges that are partnered with corporations will have 100% placement rate. We did a fantastic piece, short documentary about the growth in orthotics. We talked earlier about we're living
orthotics
longer.
Orthotics are the little pieces that go inside your shoe.
Well, orthotics, right? and even leg
prosthetics.
Yeah, right. But we're living longer. We're keeping people with diabetes longer. We not as much right now, thank God, but we had a lot of people coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq that survived what they traditionally would not have survived. This is an industry where there is a need, and there's a limited number of schools in this country that have this program. The one we did, and we can send that to you too, you can put it on your website, was really about this partnership. And these are good-paying, middle-class jobs. So it's interesting how you can, as we always say, almost every story is a job story. You know, we talk about healthcare, we talk about living longer. So where's the opportunity? And where's the opportunity for my kids so they don't have a bunch of debt and no opportunity in my community?
Sure. And in addition, by the way, to the education piece, this is an opportunity for economic expansion. So the longevity economy today, mm-hmm. which is products and services and related economic activity for people over 50, is $7.6 trillion, according to Oxford Economics, which would make it the third largest economy in the world, and it's underserved.
Wow.
So what I would say, Hal, to your kids is if they want a fantastic opportunity, they want to know where the growth opportunity is for the future, the growth opportunity is thinking about how to capitalize on this demographic shift, new products, new services. You know, I sometimes say that, you know, my wife wants shoes that are just as stylish as she wanted when she was 30. She just wants them to be more comfortable, right?
I want
a car that's just as fast as the car that I drove when I was 30, but I want it to be more comfortable. So there's a tremendous opportunity to think about these things positively, not just negatively. People talk about the silver tsunami. People talk about the prospects for AI and tech, you know, as kind of job destruction mechanisms. But lots of new things are going to be needed. And what we need is we need people to think creatively and, frankly, institutions,
yes.
educational institutions, businesses, policy institutions, which tend to be not as ambitious as maybe they were in history to think about them and to tackle them. You know, we got to the moon. And there's a lot of other stuff we can do if we just stop some of the nonsense and put our shoulder to the wheel.
I want to sort of bring things to sort of a close, but what I'd like to do is have each of you sort of give everybody a tip. So maybe a tip for young people looking for jobs, maybe a tip for older people looking for something to do. But let's kind of each pick a different area and just sort of give people a thought of maybe something they can take off. What would you focus on aging. What is it that you could tell people who are thinking about retirement?
Yeah, well, so my plea to people is at least, and this maybe goes back to your comment about the person who's kind of checking off the days, think about the real implications of retirement, of traditional retirement, withdrawal, age segregation, oftentimes kind of moving away from faith institutions and from cultural institutions and work and educational institutions. So think about things like transitional retirements, part-time work. Again, this notion of re-education, staying in the game as long as possible. While that game may be frustrating, we all have good days and bad days. Some of us have more bad days than good days. But the notion of staying relevant and engaged in some way, I think, is an incredibly powerful opportunity and really need for most people.
Well, what about for young people? AI, robots, so where seems to be the big growth area?
I think right now, healthcare is a big growth area.
Cybersecurity
is huge. We did a town hall on that, too, and it's over 2.3 million jobs need to be filled worldwide in that area. So if you're looking for something in the future, that's probably going to, you know, give you some job security for a while until something else changes and you have to change your job again. Cybersecurity is a big area. And data analytics, we were talking about that earlier today, that people who have the ability to look at numbers, understand technology, and analyze it. You can't go wrong with working on your soft skills at all, because that is one of the things that all the employers will tell us that they really need, people who know how to take the technology or take the data and figure out what to do with it, because they want you to help them grow their business. So that's somewhere to look.
I guess the final thing is that we have been focusing on the future of work. So is the future of work exciting? Is the future of work bleak? What is the future of work? Anybody want? Here, I'm going to throw the ball up in the air. Who's going to spike it? Come on, Joan, take it. Bam.
I think if it's not exciting, then we should all just go home or head down to our little umbrella drinks. But we like to think that it is exciting. We don't know what's coming. A lot of times our founder Art gets asked, what do you think is going to happen? We don't know, but we do know that there are a lot of opportunities and a lot of solutions that people just don't know about, which is why the storytelling is so important. And, you know, on the other side of we think it's exciting is, you know, what has shocked me in the 4 years of being at Working Nation and going around the country is there's a deep level of fear in this country on both sides of the aisle, but there's deep, deep fear. And we talk about that, the perhaps older worker and their kids living with them. Maybe they do have a degree. They have a lot of debt. Their parents are living with them. What am I going to do? That the amount of fear. So I think also just keeping in mind and being aware that our culture's changing. The numbers, like the BLS numbers, do not tell the true story about the people that are coming out of school and are underemployed. And the last thing that I love is somebody said to me along the way, there's this real issue in our country and our culture where it's not everybody has to go to college, but my kid will. And you know, obviously the numbers tell us you have a better shot at having a longer career in the middle class if you get a degree, but not everybody has to go to college, and it doesn't have to be 4 years. It doesn't have to be a 2-year program. We're seeing that with different programs online. So I think just keeping an open mind to, you know, what do I want to be doing and what do I need to get there? Because the path has changed. It's no longer a ladder, as we say, it's a lattice. The path to getting to that middle class lifestyle is different than it was before.
Yeah, and for parents, and maybe I'm thinking about the news of the day, but for parents, you know, instead of obsessing about where your kids are going to get into college and potentially doing anything legal or illegal to get them in, maybe you should be thinking a lot more about teaching adaptability and flexibility and the kinds of things that need to happen to respond to a very fast moving, which is one thing I think we know is a reality, a very fast moving series of changes in the future, which are very unlikely to slow down. So, you know, Ramon even kind of said, we're not sure where things will go. We're not sure where things will go. So you have to be the kind of person who's resilient enough, flexible enough, adaptable enough to be able to deal with that speed of change.
To Ramona, Paul, and Joan, thanks so much. A lot of really interesting stuff to digest there and unwrap. Really important things to think about because the future is what's ahead, right? So very important. What the Hal? That's the podcast. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please do. And give us a few of those stars showing that you like what we do. See you next time. Thanks so much for joining us.